This is Father Ted, and you are listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast.
All right, we're back again to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast. And today, I am really happy to have my good friend Phil Kress, who is a fellow blue belt. And we've trained together for a long time, actually. He's actually one of my first friends back at Rev MMA, where I kind of started out. And he's also one of the OGs of the bunker as well. And he's a police officer as well. There's a trend in my guests. I don't know, half of them are police officers, but Phil's been training up to today, and I'll let him kind of talk about his journey a bit. But Phil, it's really nice to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. To be honest, I'm a little surprised, I guess, humbled at least to be invited on something like this. I think this is the first time I've ever done like a talk or anything really interviewee. So it's pretty cool.
Okay, I'm glad.
And yeah, and like you said, yeah, we started out, I'm pretty sure we started out at Rev right around the same time, because I know it was like just pre-pandemic.
I could be wrong, but I think you were there slightly before me, but I might be.
It was one or the other. We were like a month apart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I started in November 2019.
Yeah. I might have been October. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So, because I remember you were one of the first people I met at that lunchtime class. Remember Mark Brunner? Mm-hmm. Lunchtime class.
Yeah.
But we would see each other a lot there at the beginning. So you started around that time. So what got you into why did you decide to join there and just start jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, okay. So my journey to jiu-jitsu, I guess, was a little bit, well, I don't know if it's different, but it wasn't one of those things where it was like I was just looking for a fun way to exercise and get fit or anything like that. I've known about it for a very long time. You know, you have all those friends that love UFC and things like that. So yep. And then throughout high school, we never, because I'm from up north, right? So a very small community. We don't have or didn't have a lot of access to things like that. So through high school, I was just doing a lot of fitness stuff. And when we started doing that, it really just kind of made everything seem very friend oriented and group oriented within a very tight knit community. When I started in high school doing workouts and stuff like that, we would come in early before school. We would stay late after school. Every weekend we'd fill our time with some sort of exercise. We would all get together at somebody's house, have a great time. And that's what it would be. Fast forward to university and post university, I was working at gyms, coaching, things like that. It kind of really expanded my view of what fitness could be. Seeing it as a business didn't really appeal to me too much at that point. And then I got hired as a police officer.
Was that before? You were already a police officer when you joined jiu-jitsu, right?
Yeah, correct. I had been working for probably around a year at that point, mm-hmm. just a year on. But so prior to getting hired, around that time, I kind of stopped competing in terms of fitness type stuff. With weightlifting and things like that, I never really went much further than the provincial or kind of local level. Mm-hmm. And then, so the competitive drive was always there to do something like that, competing against somebody or some group of people. I played rugby in university too. So I had a good mix of team and individual style of sports. But the jiu-jitsu side of things came when being a police officer, I started my career in Jane and Finch, and for anybody who
Ooh.
Knows anywhere of Toronto, that intersection is synonymous with a higher crime area of the city or the GTA in general. Now, I mean, is it as bad as everybody says? Not, I would say no, because I worked there for 4 years. Sure, it's got its moments where there are a lot more dangerous things that happen versus other places, but you know, crime happens everywhere. So,
sure.
But I think Jane and Finch just has that synonymous name or extra little factor of kind of craziness when people say the words.
Well, my church, my old church was 5 minutes from there.
Right.
Right. The first bunker, right? Like it's like.
Oh yeah. Just south of the 401. Yeah.
I was Trithewey and Jane, which is also not a great
area. Yeah. You were right next to 12 Division Station. That's right.
Yeah.
So I became a police officer in 2018, and then working about a year in that Jane and Finch community, you get into a lot of physical altercations where you do need to go hands-on with people and you need to touch people, whether it's just a simple arrest where they are extremely compliant or you know, you go somewhere, you have zero idea about what's going on. Something could be completely nonviolent and calm at one point, and then at the turn of a dime, you're in the middle of a fist fight and nobody knows what's going on. So I had always been in like contact sports. I played a lot of that kind of stuff, but my abilities quickly became very apparent at how little I had in terms of controlling somebody. And I had worked with some people that I worked with. They were in that jiu-jitsu community. One of my close colleagues that I worked a lot with was a purple belt, and he had been training forever. I had a blue belt friend, and they always just seemed a lot more calm, controlled, chilled out, a lot more confident, I guess you could say is the word. In a lot of these scenarios where just a physical presence can be the difference between how you're gonna take somebody into your custody and you know, touch them when you need to, whether they like it or not, and you have to just do your job. And so I started asking around, and I was like, hey, does anybody know what's a good style of training? What should you do first? You know, everybody does different types of combatives type of training. You know, there's the full mixed martial arts style of people that train a little bit of everything. There's jiu-jitsu itself. There's Muay Thai. There's boxing, karate, Krav Maga. You know, you name it. Like, everybody does it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of came to terms thinking that jiu-jitsu is probably the best bang for your buck. You're not getting punched in the face, unless it's, you know, random.
White punch.
Purposefully, somebody's not punching you in the face. But you then have a lot more time touching somebody that either doesn't want to be touched or doesn't want to be put into a weird position. And they're struggling to do that, which is what happens a lot of times at work. So I chose jiu-jitsu, and somebody pointed out the gyms in my area where I lived, and Rev came up, and I went in, I checked it out, I liked it, signed up for a year right there.
Nice.
And I was committed. And then, what was it? 2 or 3 months later, pandemic hit, and we're just like, great. Here we go. Stop doing that. And then everybody kind of opened their doors in secret at some point.
Yeah, what were you doing in the first phase there?
you can train.
Are we allowed to talk about
with all the lights off? I was going into gyms and training. Nobody can turn the lights on. I got a tattoo during that time, and it was just like it was. I thought I was going into a drug den to sell like your millions blood. Of dollars worth of drugs just to come out and not be caught, you know, somebody sitting outside like a sting operation.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a very different time. But then the bunk, you invited me out to the bunker, pretty close to, you know, once they started lifting all these, restrictions.
You came to the first one too. You came to like the first room, the ghetto room, like where we had the blue mats down.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You were like, that's what I'm saying. Like you were like the first wave. Cause then we had the first lockdowns. Then we had the opening in the summer. And then we had the second, like the Omicron wave, the second lockdowns. Right.
Yeah.
And
I came in the first one when it was just, honestly, I think it was like me, you, Ali, Dara.
That was it.
Ryan, maybe.
Yeah, that was literally it. There was like nobody.
Yeah, there was only like five or six people at most.
Yeah, yeah. It was just like, those blue gymnastics mats.
Yeah, yeah.
They weren't even like one inch.
And we had to like stand in the hallway just so we could like have enough room to roll.
Yeah, yeah.
You could have like one extra person inside making sure you don't bash yourself into the wall.
It was fun though. It was good.
Yeah, it's great. Like, and that's the biggest thing I think that I really enjoyed about it, because it took me back to the smaller scaled operations that I was used to in high school when I started, you know, it wasn't jiu-jitsu, it was fitness, but you're in there with the same group of people every time. You're always just going in there without really much of a plan. And it's kind of like, what do you guys want to do today? We'll do this, this, and this. And then you just get after it. And that's the best part. Nobody cares about like a game plan. It's just, you go in, you want to hang out for an hour or so. You get a sweat on, you make some good memories, have a few laughs, choke your friend once or twice, get choked once or twice, and then you go home and do it all again the next time. And that's the best part. It takes away the kind of the extra underlying thing that is the business side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to speak badly about anybody that does some form of training or owns a gym as their point of business, because everybody needs to do something. But just for me starting out, I really enjoyed the community aspect of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really looked at it as a money thing. Which is kind of what really turned me off of coaching. Because I kind of needed to turn it into a business just to try and make some money and keep myself afloat. But it just wasn't my thing. And having to do it in that realm of fitness and things like that, I just didn't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So going back to the bunker was kind of like going back to high school when nobody really cared about things like that. And I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I said it like, I think we were talking about this with maybe Ali or Panos. Like we were saying that it was a blessing because in many ways, even though it was a horrible time and everybody was locked down, all those weird things that was going on, right? But for us who were kind of like, you know, we were fortunate enough to have some friends and to get together, it's almost like, yeah, you're not at your club. You're just doing this purely for the love of it, right? It's purely because you want to be there. No one's forcing you. You're not being graded on anything, right? You're not doing it for a belt. You're just doing it because a bunch of people want to get together, and it's like an experimental lab.
100%.
And it's just for pure fun and enjoyment. And I'm glad that that happened to us, at least you and I, because it was at the beginning of, I'm glad that that happened to us at the beginning of our journey, because I think.
Yeah, the pre-blue belt stage.
Yeah. Because you're kind of like, you're only a white belt for like a few months, and now you're thrown into like the situation where, okay, we're doing it now. And it really shows whether you really love something or not, because sometimes you don't know if you love something or not when there's, like you said, there's other factors, like other pressures. But if you're just showing up just for the sake of it, because you're just doing it, and then it really kind of, I don't know, I gained a lot of appreciation for jiu-jitsu in those months, that whole year, which was like on and off, two lockdowns. It was a long time, and I gained a lot of appreciation for the art, right? So then when we did go back to like regular training, it's like I had more, what's the word? I had more enthusiasm.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that, because that time, it really kind of tested your fortitude, mm-hmm. as to how badly do you actually, or how much do you actually enjoy doing something versus how much is this something that you've kind of just turned into like a thing that you put into your routine, and after a little while it's just something that became so ingrained in your life that you didn't even realize that it's been X amount of years that you've been doing it. And then for us, it's like we just started. We weren't in a set schedule. We weren't good. Where, I mean, personally, I'm going to speak for myself. I'm not good now. No, you know, I don't know how it took me. I think I made it to one grading once in probably a 4 or 5 year span. I was a 3-stripe white belt for like probably 4 years. And then somehow somebody thought I was okay enough to give me a blue belt. And it, but in that time when we started, I was kind of like, I was just trying to find a way to fit it in and make it a part of a routine, because I feel like that's something that we lost, especially with COVID. You know, it kind of just turned everything on its head. Mm-hmm. But once we got into that routine and being able to go to the bunker every once in a while, and, you know, training in some rooms with all the lights off so nobody thinks you're inside, and you're not telling anybody about it, you know, super secret fight club. But yeah, that really made it very apparent as to who you want to, or who's going to stick it out, who's going to keep going,
and who's not.
Yeah, who's going to help you, right? Even the people that had been going forever, and then the pandemic hit, and then they were like, yeah, this isn't for me anymore. And you're kind of like, wow, really? Like, that's all it took. But you know, everybody's got their thing, so you can't really judge them on that kind of stuff. But yeah, I was really happy with how everything turned out. And, and now we're both training together again. And
yeah. So before we jump to now,
yeah,
it's all came full circle. So the pandemic kind of finished. We both went back to kind of Rev. We were training. You trained how long at Rev before you know, with work and everything, scheduling got really hard for you?
Yeah. So then I switched, or I ended up, probably
you trained another year, I think. Sorry. You trained another year, Rev? Like I forget how long it was.
I want to say about 2 or 3 years, like pandemic time included, I was there.
Yeah, so after the pandemic, yeah, it was another like almost 2 years, I think. Yeah.
Probably 2022, end of 2022, maybe 2023.
Yeah.
So I trained there, and then I just couldn't make it work with scheduling.
Yeah, with your trip.
I just moved in with my now wife and girlfriend. We got a dog. Right. Just all these other little things that I needed to add.
little things, you know,
add into, well,
you know, marriage.
Well, anyways,
is your wife going to hear this episode?
This isn't one of those. This isn't that kind of a podcast. So all these other things got added into my life, and scheduling became a bit of a problem. So I, doing such late classes so frequently was a hard thing for me to do. I basically stopped going for like, I don't know, 4-ish months, probably at least. Mm-hmm. Tried to make it work again, couldn't make it work. I started shopping around some other gyms. I found another gym just up the street. So I trained at Action Reaction because they had a noon class. That lunchtime class was perfect for me. Middle of the day, I could go there before a night shift or during a night shift set. I could do it randomly on a day and not have to worry about any other type of scheduling issues because my wife's at work, right? So it's not anything that I need to really worry about. I trained there. I was given that's where I got my blue belt, which was awesome. I loved that place.
You trained another 2 years, I think, right? Like something like that? Maybe.
Yeah. So that would have been from probably 2023-ish until the middle of 2024. So I got my blue belt in June of 24.
Mm-hmm.
And then I trained for about another month, and then as soon as that came around, I went to a no-gi class one day, end of July. I'm defending a takedown from somebody that I'm rolling with, who just happened to be a little bit more on the aggressive side, and to no fault of anybody's. During defending that takedown, I was standing and they were trying to do like a single or a double leg from the side. My knee was bent. I straightened my leg and twisted at the same time while my foot was planted. And I heard that pop. And I knew something probably went wrong, but I didn't feel any pain other than hearing that pop. Didn't know what happened. Finished the session. Thought everything was okay. The next morning, my knee swelled up into a grapefruit, at least. Thought something might have happened. Went to a physio. Physio said, nah, it might just be like a nerve problem, or you might have done something weird. Like, we don't really know what happened. Okay, sure. That's fine.
Thanks a lot.
And I was like, yeah, you're the professional. I'll take your word for it. They gave me some stretches, said, you know, swelling should go down in a couple of weeks. You'll be fine. This was on a set of days off. So I went back to work a few days later. And at the time I was on bikes. So I'm biking around downtown. I got like a tensor bandage on my knee, you know, it every pedal, I felt like my knee was going to explode, but I had no pain. I had no pain.
Still gross.
But it was just so full of fluid.
Yeah.
That it was just so, it just felt so weird and compact and different, right? So after a couple of days of biking around, I went to the doctor and I was like, hey, I think there's something wrong. And I told them that story. And he's like, you are dumb. You should have come here immediately. Referred me to
the witch doctor.
Oh, man. Yeah. Referred me to a fracture clinic. go and see the fracture clinic a couple days later, and they're like, yeah, I think you tore your ACL. And I'm like, great, that's awesome. So that was August. I got an MRI in the middle of October, confirmed it, torn ACL. That sucks.
Yeah.
Basically immediately after the injury happened, though, I didn't go back to jiu-jitsu. I didn't train. I was pretty dumb, though, in the sense that I still needed to do something. So I thought, I'm going to work out as much as I can, and do what I can with this bum knee. Because I had no pain doing things, I thought it would be totally fine to like keep squatting, keep lunging. I didn't really push it with jumping because that was kind of weird. There was a couple of times where I was like, maybe I shouldn't have done that, where the pain actually did set in. And I was just like, this is stupid. Don't do that anymore. So then I actually told myself and stuck to my own advice, which is something that's very hard for a lot of people to do, me especially. And I didn't do any real leg training or anything like that for probably 2 months, 3 months. And miraculously, all the swelling went away. I couldn't believe it. You know, you rest something long enough and it actually starts to fix itself a little bit.
Yeah.
After it all went away, I felt I had no pain. I felt I had no instability. I started training again. I was running again. And by training, I mean just working out. I did not go back to jiu-jitsu. I was mortified at that point. I was like, what if I make it worse? What if something goes bad? What if? So I just totally stopped. I thought I had, you know, said goodbye to it forever. Fast forward to, I don't know, a month or so ago, I go to a physio, after I finally have a surgery date, which was supposed to be next week, actually. Spoiler alert. She said, I don't need surgery. She thinks that I'm fine. And I'm like, that's amazing. So I get cleared to go back to work. I get cleared from the surgeon. And I immediately Googled a bunch of different jiu-jitsu gyms about where I could probably start training again. Because I was like, you know what? I should probably try doing this again. And I found JT6 and I was like, it's just down the street. I'm going to start training again. Only now I am doing what every... I guess new style of jiu-jitsu person is doing, or whatever the tab, it might be taboo. I don't know. Some people might call me some profane words for doing it, but I pull guard now all the time. I start sitting down. If I ever get into an incident at work, I'm just going to butt scoot myself over to some bad guys. There will be no takedowns in the near future. Unless, you know, something actually requires it, but yeah, I'm trying to be a lot smarter now, and it's going well.
Good. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that so the same reason why you had scheduling, I was starting to experience the same thing, because you know, about 2 years ago I got transferred to a new church, much bigger, like literally three times larger and further away, and ever since then it's been a task, right? Like trying to keep up with the evening classes. Again, same thing. And at the beginning it was manageable because I hadn't kind of gone, I guess, full speed into the whole new role. But as you know, you progress in a new role, you start new programs, other things get more intense, and the community is massive. So especially this last year, the last few months, it was getting like, I was missing more classes. People were like, oh, where have you been? Because you're always here, right? You're here four times a week.
Yeah.
And that evening time slot was getting harder and harder to kind of do consistently. And same thing with my kids, because my kids are training, all of my three of my kids train as well. So I also had to recently leave, and I ended up at JT6 as well. So it was really cool because like literally the same week that I was kind of switching over because they have morning classes there, which really helped me. Like, it's easier for me. If I can't go nighttime, I can go 6 a.m. in the morning, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or lunchtime, you know, like there's multiple classes. So, and then it's like, oh, you're like, oh, well, I'm going to be going there. I'm like, oh, great. Good. Really good. Yeah. It's so nice. So
fate just has a funny way of working out like that in some things.
Like 5 years later, right? Like, it's
crazy.
So it's cool. It's like, we got to train like this past Monday together for the first time in a very long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because again, like the bunker doesn't exist. Like the bunker tournament exists. The actual bunker doesn't exist anymore ever since I moved to the other church.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't have that, but we have the tournament. You know, you competed in the very first tournament, the small one.
That's right.
The one where
Ryan stole that case of beer from me.
Yeah, well, because you were in the final. Yeah. So that was great. And then the next two, the big ones, you couldn't make it because of work.
Yeah.
Hopefully, maybe in December, you can come back.
I'll be sick that day.
No.
And
no.
And I'll call in sick to work.
Maybe you'll win it. Who knows?
And who knows?
You'll still maybe be a blue belt by then.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll be a blue belt for a long time.
You got 10 more years of blue belts. Come on.
Like. Yeah. Well, it took me like 5 years to get one. So.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe I'll be a lifelong blue belt. I don't know. Who cares?
Technically, yeah. You know what? In the old days, you know, in the old jiu-jitsu days, there was only blue belts. I don't know if you know any about the history of
really?
But like Helio Gracie and like the original Gracies, like in the early years, there weren't like the colors that they have now.
Sure.
Originally it was white, and then they had blue, and then they had black.
Oh.
So like that's why like these old pictures, you see these old pictures of Helio Gracie where he's wearing a blue belt as an old man.
Right.
Because it was kind of like this was the standard in the early years where you were a white belt, then you were a blue belt. You were just a blue belt for many, 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 many years. And then when they deemed that you were ready for black, you went to black. It was later they incorporated the purple and the brown.
Multiple different levels. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It just like kids' belts never existed in the early years.
Sure.
They borrowed them from like karate levels. Like,
okay.
You know, karate, taekwondo, other martial arts kind of have almost the same color progression, and they borrowed them. Why? To be able to give kids some milestones, right?
Right. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Because kids were always just in jiu-jitsu, like in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, kids were just white belts. They until they were like even like the sons of Haley, like Horion Gracie and Carlos, all those guys. Those guys were like, when we were kids, we were just blue belts forever.
Yeah,
that's what we were. Like it's just for like 12 years straight, right?
Yeah.
And then we got our black belts and then that was it. So who cares? Like
yeah, man. The color of the belt could be pink or green or you know, name any color under the sun and I'll wear it. I don't care.
Yeah.
That's a honestly, and that's the other thing too. I said I tried to use jiu-jitsu as a thing to replace competition. And I feel like I've done, that's the last thing that I want to do. I go there, I have a lot of fun, I treat it as a good time and a good sweat, and I learn something. If you don't learn something at a jiu-jitsu class, I think you should find a new jiu-jitsu instructor, because they're probably doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But you learn something new every day, you get a good sweat on. I have zero aspirations to compete in this sport, but that's what I love about what you did, which allows a subset of people who are at, I think it's just a blue belt tournament now, right?
Now we've made it into a blue belt just because.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
And so because it's just a specific, you know, stage of your career as a jiu-jitsu person, you know, you're in that special time of, if you're a four-stripe blue belt, you know, maybe that's probably the guy that you're looking to knock out of that tournament as quickly as you can, because if that dude makes it to the end, you're kind of scared, versus somebody who just got cranked from a four-stripe white belt up to the blue belt. Day to day, you're still the same person, but you just have a cool new belt or you're almost to getting a cool new belt. With the bunker tournament, anything can happen. I made it all the way to the end that first year, and Ryan stole a case of beer from me, and I'm still bitter about it. So at some point, I'm going to make a return to this because I'm going to be a blue belt for the next 15 years. And I will have my revenge.
You will be.
Because Ryan's probably going to be a purple belt or a black belt by that time. And
well, he's a purple belt now.
Exactly. So take that, Ryan. You can't have that over me anymore.
Well, and you know, I like to say, to your credit, the first year it was mixed belts because we were just eight guys, right? So we had eight guys show up for that day that could make it, and
yeah,
it was mixed belts. So we had white belts. You were a white belt. There was a brown belt. Panels, who's ultra heavy like me.
Oh man,
right?
I don't even remember.
So there was a brown belt, there's purple belt, there were blue belts, right? So
it craziness.
Was, yeah, it was all over, right? And in the end, I think Ryan was still, he was at the end of blue right then. I think.
Yeah, something like that.
Probably like a third or fourth stripe blue, right? And you were still a white belt, so, and you made it to the final with him. So that's that was cool. Like it was,
I call that sheer dumb luck, but you know.
No, it was great. The video is online. So
anything can happen on a day, and that's why you play the game.
That's right. Yeah, it's fun, right? And
100%.
Yeah, and the second one we did was still mixed belts as well, right? It was just because it got bigger. We're just trying to level it a bit, like level the playing field a bit,
make
it fair. You know, as you refine it, and you know, some people are like, well, what about purple belts? We want to party with this, like, you know, in the bunker, and what
about?
I'm like, well, yeah, I don't know. And then we were like, we were spitballing, like, okay, do we do 1 year just a purple belt tournament, or do we
right.
do it? But then it's like you're changing it, and like it's better just to keep it consistent. Like, blue belt is a good level. It's like you're not a spazzy white belt,
right? Yeah.
But you're not also like, it's just, you know, you're.
Oh, now I'm a spazzy blue belt.
Yeah. You're not, you're at that level where it's a good time. If you've never competed before, it's a safe environment. It's fairly safe.
Yeah.
Right? A bunch of, like, it's not this pressure when you go to a big tournament, right?
Exactly.
It's just fun, right? And maybe, who knows, like maybe in the future we'll do like, we talked about maybe doing some super fights.
Nice.
So maybe like, you know, for fun to open it up, we have like a black belt super fighter. We have a purple belt.
Oh man,
belt, like just for fun, right? Like just
that would be so cool.
Yeah, just for to open it up here, we're gonna do like a preliminary, for fun, and then we'll go into like the main thing, right? So we'll play with it, but I think we're gonna keep it at blue just for now, just because I think it's a nice, you know, it's a nice way to introduce. And as we get older, like myself, okay, I'm an organizer, but then also people who help out. And we're all kind of like on the same level. We're all progressing up, right? Like we're all blue and purples, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Well, at one point, we're not going to be competing anymore in it, right?
Right.
But you still kind of bring in the younger people and you kind of mentor them, which I think will be nice. So
for sure. Yeah. It's all, I feel like a lot of it now is just becoming, whenever you get into anything, the main thing should be you live it, you learn it, and then you pass on whatever you can to the next group or crew that steps into where you were, you know, living and learning it. And then if you're just the pass on guy at that point,
good enough.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there are worse things, right? Like it's good enough, right? Yeah, if you pass it on, and really, like, if you think about it, like if you train hard enough and you make it to black belt, like that's what black belt's supposed to be, right? Like there's a reason why in black belt you don't get graded anymore at black belt. Right. It's basically, okay, you've made it to black belt now. Now your degrees on your black belt are based on how much you give back. It's years
right.
of training, but active years of training, which basically means you have to train and it's assumed that you are giving back to the art, like you're passing it on, you're teaching.
Right.
And as you give back, then the degrees on your black belt reflect you giving back to the sport, not I've achieved this level, because it's assumed that you're like, okay, you're an expert by black belt, right? Like, you know,
right.
You do fairly well. But rather now you're turning around and you're refining and you're giving back what you know. Right.
Yeah.
So you perpetuate it.
Yeah. And that's really what it's all about.
Well, I hope so. We'll see. We'll see how long I keep it going. But I hope to keep doing it as long as I'm able to.
I agree. Yeah.
It'll be nice.
You know, hopefully. Well, I already don't have one ACL. You probably don't need it. I don't think. Anyways, I mean, maybe a orthopedic surgeon or two would tell you different, but what do they know, right?
Well, didn't they say you healed it, or what's going on? Like,
No. My knee is just stable enough with everything else surrounding the structure.
I see.
So that it's being, the ACL is being compensated for by everything else around my knee.
Yeah.
So will I need ACL surgery? Yeah, probably somewhere down the line. But right now, we're dealing with it.
Yeah.
Conservatively, and I am way happier about that.
Sure. Well, you're in pretty good shape too. There's a reason why we would call you CrossFit Phil. So you know, no, but it's true though. Like, so you do work out, like you said, you work out quite a bit, you lift, and of course that plays a factor, right? Because your legs are strong, your
joints
are strong, your ligaments are strong, right? And if you were weak like me and you didn't lift at all like me, I lift like once maybe a week if I'm lucky, right? But
it all adds up though.
It adds up. Yeah, 100%. It's like the structure. Like, I remember when I was younger, I used to lift a lot more. Like, when I was a kid, I was like my early 20s, right? When I got, before I got married, I'd be weightlifting a lot. And when I first started weightlifting, and I didn't know, and I had a trainer, and my trainer's like, okay, for the first like 6 months, you're not actually, you're basically just, you're strengthening your ligaments because you don't have any strength in your ligaments, right?
Yeah.
So doing all this functional strength. He had me doing like, you know, tensor bands and stuff like that kind of machines, you know, where it's resistance training, right? And I'm like, why is he doing this? Like, this is boring. And he was like, well, you got to do this first because you got to strengthen your joints, right? Before we start lifting heavy. And he was right. So I did that for like 4 or 5 months.
That's really cool, right? that happened that long ago for you, because I feel like I had the opposite experience where, I mean, you're only going to do what you know, right?
Sure.
So my friends and I would just basically watch every video on YouTube that we could. We made like a home gym in the back of in the backyard of one of my good friends' backyards, and he drilled like 4x4s into the ground, cemented them into the ground, put a piece of pipe across it, and that was our pull-up bar.
Nice.
We bought all our own equipment,
mm-hmm.
and we just kind of did what we could, and we did what we knew. Could we have done better? Yeah. Were we little rubber humans starting doing that at 15 and 16?
Yeah,
that was a lot better in terms of not getting injured then. But now, looking back on it, I feel like my lifting life and longevity as a weightlifter could have probably been extended had I done things a little differently back then. But that's
how it goes. It depends on who you have, right? Yeah, like, I've never been seriously injured, right?
Yeah.
And I'm 40, I'll be 44 end of this month. And
it's, yeah, the only injuries I've ever sustained, I broke my thumb playing rugby. I tore my quad playing rugby. Mm-hmm. And I tore my ACL doing jiu-jitsu. I've never been hurt working out.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Good.
Which little tweaks and everything like that, but that happens to everybody. But
yeah,
no serious injuries.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is good because it'll allow your ACL to heal, right? Because, you know, it's like everything else, all the stabilizing muscles around it are helping it, supporting it, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, for something like a ligament, though, like this, I don't think there's no way that it's going to reattach itself. But because there's no other damage to anything inside of it, or at least I feel like there isn't, because I don't have any symptoms of things like that. Not needing surgery right now or prolonging it is the best course of action in my mind, because, you know, modern medicine is amazing right now, and it's only going to probably get better. So I'm hoping, you know, 15, 20 years down the line, they have some random new technology where they don't even need to actually cut you open and they can just like zap you with some bolt of lightning or something, and it just regrows your ACL inside of you.
Inject back into your knee or something.
Just inject a piece of whatever, and it'll just make a new tendon or ligament.
Well, they're doing stuff like that. Like, you know, I was like, what was like
Joe? I'm not going to go to Mexico and do anything crazy like that. Yeah. And
Joe Rogan had the shoulder, the rotator cuff, right? He went and got, okay, mind you, he's rich, so he has money. And he went in there and they injected him with these stem cells, right? And it was like totally painful, like the injection, but then it actually regrew, like he didn't do any surgery. He's healed. It's crazy, right? So, you know, if you have hundreds of thousands of dollars, which I do not.
Exactly.
We can do stuff like that. But as that technology gets better though, right? It gets cheaper.
Yeah.
And who knows? Just be careful.
Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah. And you know what, though? This is good. You said, you know, no one's going to make fun of you for, like, pulling guard. Like, you can't always wrestle people.
Well, that's the other thing, too. You gotta pick and choose how you're going to train, who you're going to train with, what you're going to do, what you're going to work on. You know, you actually said it the other week prior to me starting, because I was talking about this exact thing. And you're like, yeah, you know, everything's not like a, not just, you're not just going hard every time. And it's kind of like, man, I got to remind myself that way more often now, because everything used to just be one of two speeds, and it was either fifth gear or hold my beer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's no other way around it. But now, even with just like random fitness stuff that I'm doing, like a workout could be just going to the gym and, you know, doing like bicep curls and lat pull downs, which is things that I never did before, but you don't really sweat that much. You don't breathe too hard, but you're doing something, and doing something's better than doing nothing. Or like just going for a run and like not going hard, just like being alone with your thoughts for X amount of minutes or an hour or something like that. And I feel like that's even the bigger benefit of it. Like training anything, it was always my way of just getting inside my head, but also getting outside of my head at the same time, if that makes any sense. Like I would get asked all the time, oh, well, like, what kind of things do you do for your mental health? What do you do for, like, you work in this weird field where you see all this random crazy things, or you're involved in all these crazy things. Like, you know, you should talk to somebody, or you should tell somebody these things. And it's like, yeah, you can do that. And I've tried that. And if that works for you, more power to you. Like, do whatever you need to do to be the best person or version of yourself that you can be, and let those types of things out in a safe and positive way. But for me, I have found that going to the gym and just turning my brain off for an hour and not having to think about anything other than whatever it is that's right in front of you, that is like the most therapeutic thing I've found in my entire life. You can call it an addiction. I wouldn't call it an addiction. I'd say it's just something that I do and I enjoy. Did I overdo it at one point in my life? Probably. Training like a crazy amount, but I was, you know, younger and trying to do something that I thought was gonna work out, and it never did. Mm-hmm. But now it's just a fun thing that I do that is extremely beneficial for everything else that happens in my life.
Yeah,
whether it's jiu-jitsu, where you're doing it with somebody else, or playing a team sport like rugby, or you play pickup hockey or basketball, whatever that is, or you go to the gym and you just put your headphones on and you turn your brain off for an hour. It all works and it's all amazing. I think it works the best for me, If somebody else has some other version of it that works for them, who am I to tell you that you're wrong?
Yeah, no, I do the same thing. Jiu-jitsu for me is the exact same thing. It's turning my brain off because you do in your field, you're dealing with a lot of problems, and that's what I'm doing too.
Just
I'm dealing with problems all the time,
like
a lot of problems, and a lot of people's problems, like their issues, and you have to learn how to deal with that and cope with it. And jiu-jitsu for me is, if I don't have that, I don't feel well, because it's where I don't have to think about all the other problems, right? Yeah. And your brain does turn off. Like, yes, you're thinking about jiu-jitsu, but that's relatively simple compared to the myriad of other complex problems in the world, right?
Exactly. Also, and you know, people will call something that you or I might not think is stressful as the most stressful thing that's ever happened to them in their life. And it very well may be. You know, it's like when somebody complains about their internet not working, or they get mad at their, you know, they're sitting in traffic and the person in front of them isn't moving as fast as they want them to. You got to think, this is a pretty good problem to have. But for somebody, it could be the worst problem that they have. And if those are the types of stresses that they need to relieve themselves of through whatever means that they do that, I can't blame them.
Yeah. Everybody's different.
Yeah. And everybody goes into these things with a different goal in mind. And, you know, you just got to respect that and hope that everything is happening for a good positive reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nobody goes in there with a bad state of mind and looking to just, you know, especially in jiu-jitsu, right? Like you can seriously hurt somebody. And if you go in there with like a bad temper one of these days and, you know, you put a move on somebody that you're just having a bad day and you're like, you know what, maybe I will just crank this one a little harder, or I'll do something like that a little bit more, or I'll hold on to something a little bit longer than I should. You like to think that that kind of stuff never happens, but people have bad days.
Yeah, but interestingly enough, though, in the jiu-jitsu community, I do find that it happens very rarely. You would think that would happen more than it does.
Right.
But it doesn't, because we've both been training for like 5.5 years now, right? And how often have we seen that? Not a lot. I haven't. And I've trained at a lot of different gyms.
100%.
You know, and most of the time, even with the hard rules, right, I can't remember somebody like going after me like in a malicious way because they're angry that
day. Yeah.
It's a very positive community, and perhaps because I think it's also, like you said, like different people have different stressors, and for some people what's nothing for one person might be like a serious problem for another. But like, that's why jiu-jitsu I think is good for most people, because it's like it puts things into perspective. Like, you know, if you're upset about traffic, let's say, right, and it's even it's really kind of gnawing on you, right? Well, now you have a guy like me, 300 pounds, sitting on your chest, right, trying to choke you. And if you can learn to deal with that stress, which is like up here, super high, then suddenly the stress down here of traffic is not that bad anymore.
So it's
you know, it's like the jiu-jitsu ramps it up to a level where you become comfortable with the uncomfortable, right, with extreme uncomfortability.
Yeah.
And then everything else seems not that bad anymore.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? It's not that bad.
Man, yeah. The perspective shift definitely comes at you very quickly.
Sure.
I remember my first day at Rev. I had no idea what was going on. We did a, you know, whatever lesson we were doing. I can't even remember what we were learning. And then they're like, okay, we're going to roll, which I had no idea what that meant. Yep. And then, you know, some 110-pound three-stripe white belt, I asked him if he wanted to roll. And he's like, yeah, sure. And I think I just stuck my arm out forward like I would be going, like you would be going for a handshake. I mean, I wasn't trying to shake his hand. I didn't know what I was doing. So I put my arm out and I extended it nicely to him, and he grabbed it. He arm dragged me, climbed my back in the mat in a matter of about 0.03 seconds, and climbed me like a gorilla climbing a tree. Put his arm around my neck and choked me out in a bit, or and choked me to the point of me having to tap out in probably less than 5 seconds. That was my first experience with like training jiu-jitsu, and I was like, what in the world just happened to me? And then a couple of people came over and like ran over immediately, and they were just like, they talked to the other guy and they were like, dude, what are you doing? Like, it's his first day. You like, slow down. Don't just kill him. And the other guy kind of just like smirked. And I was like, okay, I get it. And that, you know, for a lot of people that would turn them off, but I think, can you still hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. This, like, my phone's getting all funky here. Yeah. So for a lot of people, I think that would turn them off. But me being a younger, competitive type of person and not wanting to be bad at anything or not wanting to lose at anything, that just drew me right back in. And I was like, okay, we're going to do this again. And then I think that kid probably choked me out another 6 or 8 times in like a 3-minute round. But it was fun. And I always wanted to come back. Because I wanted to get choked out less times than that the next time. And that's kind of what it's getting to.
Sure.
Yeah. So now I can, when I only get choked out once in a 5-minute round from a brown belt, I know that they're just being nice to me, but also, it's a little bit cooler of an experience. And I try to do that to the newer people that I train with. Try not to just go full bore on them.
Sure. Nice. Well, on that, we're coming up to an hour, dude.
Yeah, it's been a long conversation. I just want to say I'm sorry to everybody that actually listens to this and makes it this far. I know that I am I'm a terrible, terrible storyteller.
No, not at all.
It takes me a long, long time to get out one point, and I probably talked around a lot of things just to not even get to the point that I was trying to make in the beginning. But I just wanted to say I'm very thankful that everybody would make it this far in an hour long podcast of me just rambling.
No, dude, it was like great. It was great. No, I'm not being nice. I tell you if you sucked. But no, it was a great conversation. And yeah, no, like it's it, I'm excited because it's like, again, you're like one of my friends that we started together, then we didn't see each other for a while, and now we're back at the same gym, like literally like last week. And that's,
yeah.
I'm excited to see, you know, where your journey is going to go. I'm always excited about my own journey. I'm excited that we're at a new place for the new friends.
For sure.
New people to kind of explore and, you know, new training partners, and also our old friends too, of course, which we will still see at different places.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the journey continues, right? So it's going to be a good time. And, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. And
yeah, I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, and maybe we'll have you on again soon. We'll see.
Awesome.
Yeah, man.
Maybe I'll learn a little thing or two about how to be a good podcast guest.
Maybe I can actually ask some good questions. We'll see. Anyways, thank you very much, Phil. Really appreciate it. Thank you everybody for listening this week, and we'll see everybody next week again. So take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu podcast. Feel free to follow us on Instagram and YouTube. And if you want to reach out with any questions or if you're interested in being on the show, feel free to email us at bunkerjiu-jitsu@gmail.com. Thanks and take care.